We're on a mission from God.
And now for something completely different.
This is Pastor Jolly John Lukumski coming to you from Northfield, Minnesota, and I have with me
Pastor Matt Youngblood Clark, coming to you from St. Louis, Missouri, where I serve as pastor at Ascension Lutheran.
And I just want to let you know, so we got up here in Minnesota, and of course, I forgot my baby aspirin. Let me tell you, here's what happens when you get older. You all start using baby stuff. I'm not sure why that is. But one of the baby things that you use as you get older is baby aspirin. I don't know if they take them away from the mother and the father when they're really young. I'm not sure how they make baby aspirin.
Baby aspirin.
but I have to take one a day, and I forgot it. And so I had to go up to the local drugstore. And what I couldn't believe is I walked in the door. It made me scared that maybe I'd come up to Minnesota too soon. They had snow shovels.
Oh, no.
They had snow shovels in the entryway for sale. And I thought, oh, I guess I should have waited a month. I don't know how to interpret that. But so far, for those that are concerned, we have not seen any snow. Okay. We've been up here since the end of May and no snow up to this point. But I guess at any time. So that's why you always have to have your snow shovels ready.
It is Minnesota after all, I guess.
Yeah.
No snow here either in St. Louis, John.
And I bet you there's no snow shovels on sale at your local CVS either, is there?
Not a snow shovel in sight. No.
So that's Minnesota for you. We have some, and what's exciting is that we are going to share with you something that both of us had an opportunity to preach on. It is about the Sabbath law. And Matt, I was asking you, so what take did you take on, and what did you respond to me?
I said, well, you're going to have to wait for when we're on the air, John.
Okay.
Wait for the recording. So then I will have the big reveal for both of us. What we preached about when it comes to the Sabbath.
So this is exciting for me as it is for you listeners. I have no idea what Matt's going to be talking about. And the other problem now is that we're both seeing each other because now we have video cameras. And the disturbing thing for me is that I'm up on the screen at the same time too. So I keep, who's that guy waving? Oh, it's me waving my hands. So... All right, so we're going to try to do the best we can.
I'll try not to wave my hands, John.
Well, that's okay. I'm distracting myself, so you don't need to worry about that. And we want to do the Sabbath, and it's a text that comes from the Gospel of Mark. And I understand you're just going to do Mark this summer, right?
Yeah, that's the plan. So we thought, well, you know, in the summer months, we usually do some kind of sermon series. And we thought, well, we looked at the lectionary, and it goes straight through Mark. So we thought, well, let's make it the summer of Mark. So we're just calling it Mark and Me, and we're digging deep into the background of Mark, and then also talking about, of course, well, what does each reading have to do with me?
So I have a suggestion then for us. Should we just do that? This could be our summer theme for Wrestling with the Basics.
Perfect.
Mark and Me.
Love it.
I like that. Yeah.
Let's do it. Yeah.
So let's get started at the text here, and I'm going to read you the first verse, and I'm going to tell you what it should have said. Okay.
What it should have said. Oh,
and then,
okay.
Then you can add whatever comment. And as we move on, oh, I'm so excited about what surprises you'll have for us and for me. But here's what it said. It said, one Sabbath, this is the English Standard Version, by the way. One Sabbath, he, that's Jesus, was going through the grain fields. And as they made their way, his disciples began to pluck heads of grain. Matt, here's a generational thing. You didn't have the King James Version when you were young, did you?
No, I grew up mostly with the New International Version. Yeah, the King James was not the go-to version.
So King James was my younger translation. I imagine several of our listeners, I say several because we got maybe five, six. So maybe 3 or 4 out of the 5 or 6 probably grew up.
Did you know King James personally, John?
No. He was before my time, but I did use his translation. And I'm sure many of our listeners were familiar with that. And so if we had heard it in the King James, this is what it would have been. It would have been, and it came to pass one Sabbath, Jesus was going through the cornfields. So I'm thinking there must have been some Minnesotan on the King James committee, because grain fields are always translated cornfields. And so it had to be somebody from Minnesota. But this, it came to pass. Do you remember the NIV? Did it say it came to pass?
Probably not. It's probably the King James, but yeah. It really says cornfield in the King James.
It does say cornfields.
Yeah, I don't know how much corn there was.
Well, that's what I'm thinking too. But
in that region, but okay.
I guess maybe in England, that's where you had a lot of corn. I don't know. I could not find a modern English translation that uses the phrase "it came to pass." And I just wanted to bring that up because it is actually what Mark wrote. Agenita would be the word in the Greek. And it's important because he and Luke does this too. Whenever there's something that Mark wants you to note that he thinks this is really important for you to pay attention to, he will always begin it with the phrase, "it came to pass." So it's unfortunate that the modern English translations leave that out. I guess they think it probably sounds too King James-ish or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure why. But so just so people will know, whatever it is you and I are talking about today, this is something worth knowing, okay? So any comments about that first verse from your approach?
Now, I would just say, in addition to Mark, just a little background on Mark.
Sure, yeah.
In addition, it came to pass being a kind of a phrase that might, alert listeners and readers to, yeah, this is important. Another phrase that Mark uses is immediately or right away. It would be interesting how the King James translated that. But this idea of immediately. So Mark's gospel is one of action, and you almost get this feeling of urgency in his gospel, that things are moving on fast. It's focusing on Jesus' actions and deeds. And I think I get that feeling even in the reading we're looking at now. We have this episode with Jesus' disciples in the wheat field or the corn field or some kind of field. And then right away they're in the synagogue. And there's a similar thing that happens. So this action that takes place, shortest of the gospels is 16 chapters, but boy, it is packed with action. And it's also a gospel that pretty early on transitions to Holy Week. Much of the Gospel of Mark is about that last week of Jesus' life.
So you got the immediately, because again, like you said, Mark is all about action. Yeah. In fact, I've called him the action movie version of the Gospels. You don't get a lot of the teaching, but you do get the stories. And I think immediately also reminds you, this is eyewitness stuff. He's probably getting most of his material from Peter. And you get that sense that this is somebody that was right there, actually saw it. And in fact, in this text, there's something that only Mark tells us, which is cool when you think he's the shortest of the Gospels. So if he thought it was important to throw in there, well, then that must be really significant too. But now I'll keep you in suspense.
Oh, all right. Fair enough, John. Yeah. So, I just to pick up on what you mentioned about Mark and Peter. So Mark was someone who accompanied Paul and Barnabas on their first missionary trip, at least part of it.
Yeah.
And then later he accompanies Barnabas again. But really the one it seems to be closest to is Peter. And it's most likely that Peter, toward the end of his life is in Rome before his martyrdom. And Mark may have been with him there. And is recording this, like you said, firsthand eyewitness account from Peter, and maybe even with a sense of urgency if Peter's in prison, before he meets his end, right? Let's get this down, and he preserves that account for us. So maybe that's part of the reason for the action too, is maybe Peter's nearing the end of his life and knows it, or Peter's kind of a guy of action himself as we read the Gospels, and that's reflected in the account that he relays then to Mark, or John Mark, sometimes we call him.
And thank you for reminding us, this is not something that somebody made up. These are real people, Peter, Mark, writing down a very real story. See, that's what, now you got me shivering, because this isn't, like, we're not reading some fiction or some novel or whatever. No, these are real people, and they're trying to record the things they thought were so significant that you and I and all of our listeners should know. So I'm going to keep on reading. How far would you like me to read?
Okay. Well, before you want, John, if you want to do the whole account of the grain field, that's fine by me.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll read it through the Old Testament story, and then we'll save the big finish for later. Okay. So the Pharisees were saying to Jesus, look, why are they doing what is not lawful on the Sabbath? And he said to them, have you never read what David did when he was in need and was hungry, he and those who were with him, how he entered the house of God in the time of Abiathar the high priest and ate the bread of the presence, which is not lawful for any but the priest to eat, and also gave it to those who were with him? All right, so we'll just stop there.
All right.
So any particular comments about that? Or you...
I'm going to go back to... Jesus is walking through the grain fields with his disciples, right? So then the Pharisees, these Jewish religious leaders, these Pharisees, where do these guys come from, John, in verse 24?
Well, I think they've probably come down from Jerusalem to check Jesus out, don't you?
Yeah, probably so. But, you know, I mean, like, where were they when you start giving Jesus a hard time? It seems like they're kind of in the grain field too. I just get this impression that they're almost like hiding in the grain fields. Aha, you're eating grain, you know? I mean, because really they're in the middle of a grain field and these Pharisees kind of pop out of nowhere. Look, why are you doing what's not lawful on the Sabbath? You know, so I guess my point is, the Pharisees are out to get Jesus.
They're out
to get Jesus and his disciples. And this is only chapter 2 of Mark, John. Already they're out to get him. And the thing they're going to try to get him with and pin him with is breaking the Sabbath.
I love that image. I can see them. They're kind of pushing the grain aside, peeking out. Oh, look. And I do want to emphasize again what you just said, that word look in there. That's, again, an interesting detail that Mark adds. And that is the point. They are shocked. They just cannot believe what they're seeing Jesus' disciples doing. Look, man, they're doing what is not lawful. I would point out right away, though, just in defense of the disciples, it's not that they're stealing. They're not stealing. What's ironic is what they're doing is actually lawful. The Old Testament goes out of its way to protect needy people. And one of the laws in the Old Testament is that if you're needy and you're hungry, yes, you can pluck a grain out of your neighbor's field to feed yourself, to end your hunger. Now, you can't go reap your neighbor's field. That would be thievery. Or to put it in Minnesotan terms, since we're now in Minnesota, you can go and you can have have an ear of corn if you're hungry from your neighbor's cornfield, but you can't go take a bushel of corn from your neighbor's cornfield. All right. So just to clarify that's not the problem. What is the problem then, Matt, if it's not that they're stealing from somebody's fields?
Well, in the eyes of the Pharisees, the problem is they're doing work, right? Work that's not allowed on the Sabbath day. So, you know, God gives the Sabbath day, but then the Pharisees take it and run with it, and they make man-made laws and regulations for the Sabbath day. Some of them pretty arbitrary, it seems to me, and pretty nitpicky, and they want to make sure that the people are forced to rest sufficiently.
Can I share with you the Sabbath law for those out there who might have forgotten that from the Ten Commandments? Because actually, wasn't this cool? This was actually the Old Testament lesson from Deuteronomy chapter 5. So it says, the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter or your male servant or your female servant or your ox or your donkey or any of your livestock, are the sojourner who is within your gates. And now Deuteronomy adds this additional comment that your male servant and your female servant may rest as well as you. And it just tickled me because God knows this. If God would come to me and say, you know, John, I don't want you to work on the Sabbath, I'd say, no problem, God. I'll just have my servants do it. But no, the Sabbath is meant to be a rest for everyone. And so, as you said, that's the problem. These guys are not resting, are they, Matt? They're plucking corn. Isn't that a sin? How can you defend them?
Yep. In the eyes of the Pharisees, that's exactly it.
And as you said, Matt, there were 39. They had a list of 39 generic things you could not do because then you wouldn't be resting. It included plowing, sowing, reaping, binding sheaves, threshing, winnowing, grinding, pounding to powder, and of course, plucking.
No plucking.
And isn't that interesting? Mark doesn't mention that they're eating because you could eat on the Sabbath.
That's can't pluck.
But you can't pluck. Yeah. So I think that's kind of clever that Mark has kind of pointed out. Here's the problem.
Yeah.
So what do we do with that? Matt?
So where did I go with this?
Yeah.
So let me explain that in the form of a joke. Is that okay?
We love jokes.
A little story. So there were three well-to-do sons. They were discussing what to get their mother for her birthday. The first brother said, I bought mom a car with her very own chauffeur because her eyesight's failing and I'll help her get around better. The second brother said, well, I bought mom a penthouse apartment because it's easy for her to take care of than where she's at now. The third son said, well, since mom has a hard time reading the Bible due to her bad eyesight, I bought a rare parrot that I've trained for months to recite Bible verses perfectly so she can listen. So following the mom's birthday, they receive a thank you note from their mom, and it says, to my three dear boys, thank you for your nice gifts. However, I couldn't use the car because it's too difficult to go out anymore. The new penthouse, it's nice, but it's still just too big. But my third son, you did a fine job in choosing a gift. The chicken was delicious.
Okay. Now, Matt, that is a great joke, but what in the world does it have to do with the Sabbath?
I thought you would ask, John. Here it is. The joke's about gift giving, and the joke is also about, in its punchline, a misuse of a gift, a wonderful gift that was given of a talking parrot, right? She ate the bird. So here's the deal. God gives the gift of Sabbath, right? You read Deuteronomy, chapter 20 of Exodus 2 talks about how, you know, God in 6 days made the earth and the seventh day he rested, and he gives this to us as a day for us to rest. In 6 days you shall do your labor, okay? But the seventh day, no, it's a Sabbath to the Lord. The Lord's blessed it and made it holy. So he's given us this gift of Sabbath and rest, a time where, what a loving God. He wants us to rest and to rest with a purpose to focus on him. So here's this gift, and the Pharisees, they're terrible gift receivers, right? They don't receive this gift for what it's supposed to be, but instead they add all these sorts of laws and regulations to it. And this gift, and I guess here's my point, this gift that is meant to be a blessing of Sabbath, the Pharisees make into a burden. You know, this gift that God gives is a blessing they make into a burden. And that was the direction I headed with my sermon in this text.
So let me read you the verse then that is unique to the Gospel of Mark. So if you had decided to do your sermon series on Luke and me or Matthew and me, you would never have got this. But thank heavens we're doing Mark and me, because Mark is the one who tells us this is what Jesus said. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And Matt, that was the problem, wasn't it? They flipped it. They thought the Sabbath was something that God had made so that men would have to obey and follow all of these rules and regulations they had put out. And in fact, they totally misunderstood the law, didn't they?
Yeah.
The reason God created the Sabbath was for us, because it's hard. it's hard to live in this world. It ever since sin, God didn't want it to be hard. It was supposed to be paradise, but because of sin, cursed is the ground because of you, and pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken, for you are dust, and to dust you shall return. So it's sure, that's what it is. It's hard to live in this world. But God said, look, I want you to know that's not what I want. Mm-hmm. That's not my plan. My plan is to give you a Sabbath every day, an eternal Sabbath, but not here, not now, not in the world of sin. But it would be nice if you take one day and just let me take care of you, you and your servants. You don't need to do a thing. So you're absolutely right. But you know what I was thinking too, Matt? They did it with the whole law. Take the commandment. Do you teach the Luther's Catechism? Are you guys using that? If you're not, you should try that.
Yeah, I've heard of it, John. Yeah,
have you heard of it?
I'm somewhat familiar with it.
Okay.
Yeah, the Small Catechism. You bet. Yes.
well, so you remember the commandment, "Thou shalt not kill."
Yes.
That's in there.
It's in there. Commandment number 5, right?
Yeah. And here's what the meaning is. We should fear and love God that we may not hurt nor harm our neighbor in his body, but help and befriend him in every bodily need. So it's about people meeting people's needs. That's what it's about. It's not about just doing what God... Same thing with thou shalt not steal, right? We're supposed to help him to improve and protect his property and business. The whole purpose of the commandments was to address our needs and the needs of our neighbor. That's what it was about. It wasn't about God telling us to jump and do whatever he tells us to do. It was about God concerned for our needs. And so there you have it. I'll repeat it again. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So where else did you go in your sermon then, Matt?
Well, I just think that's so important, just to emphasize what you just said, first of all, John, that... Sabbath is made for man, not man for the Sabbath, because what it's a gift from God, because the law is a good thing, like if you point out, it helps to care for our needs. The law, I think sometimes we think, well, the law is bad and that's tough and it's a burden. No, the law is good. The law is even a gift from God. It benefits us and our neighbor. And, instead they made this gift into they made the Sabbath gift into works, right?
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden it's, I got to check. I'm not plucking. I'm doing good. I'm not reaping or sowing. I'm doing good, right? And instead, no, it's not about us. It's about God's gift to us of Sabbath rest.
So the thing is, like you said, and I hope our listeners understand that the law of God is good and holy. That's what Paul says too. But the problem is, of course, we're not good and holy. And so we end up being just like the Pharisees. We take the law of God and we use it as a means to judge other people, just like the Pharisees were judging the disciples. In fact, what concerns me is we don't have the Sabbath anymore. That was an Old Testament thing, but we do have Sunday worship, right? We do have don't we do the same thing? Don't we say, oh, hey, I'm such a good guy because I got up and I went to church. And you as a pastor go to church every week. You've never missed a Sunday. And we begin to think, well, that surely has to make us a little superior to those people who don't come regularly. In fact, we even have a derogatory term for them. We call them Christmas and Easter Christians. And I'm thinking, that's not right. That worship is a reason for us to judge other people. And what really scares me then is what we do to worship for ourselves. And it's just what you said, that we make worship into a law, into a work, into something we have to do, and no, that's not the point of worship at all. It's not something we got to do to make God happy. So I have to share with you the final verse of our text where Jesus goes on to say, so the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. So God gave us the law, but unfortunately, because we're sinners, the law doesn't really help us. But he gave us something better, didn't he? He gave us his son, Jesus, who is the Lord of the Sabbath. And see here, Matt, we were so sinful, we even have to explain what the word Lord means. Because right away we hear the word Lord and we think of the guy that tells you to do something, right? He's the boss. Yeah, you better get up and do what I tell you to do. Mm-hmm. But Matt, what does the word Lord really mean in the Bible?
Well, Lord, master, that word can be translated as. The one, yeah.
Okay, I stumped you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead, John. Yeah, I mean, what do you? Go ahead. I'm sure you have a much more evangelical definition for us.
Well, of course I do, and you do too. You silly guy, because despot. That's the word for the guy that bosses you around. That's in the Greek too. That's in the English. But the word here is curious. And the curious, the Lord is my life and my salvation, David says in Psalm 27. Who is the Lord in Psalm 23, Matt?
Yeah, the Lord is my shepherd.
Yeah. And if there seems to be, but Matt and I are trying to do this video thing, so we are getting a little bit of lag. So if someone asks a question and then there's no immediate response, it's because we're waiting for the computer to catch up to us. But yeah, that's what a Lord is. He's the guy that's with you when you walk through the valley of the shadow of death. He's the one that defends you with his rod and his staff. He's the one that doesn't want to give you a handful of grain. He wants your cup to overflow. He's the one that wants to make sure you know goodness and mercy will follow you all the days of your life, and you will dwell in the house of the Lord. How long? Forever. Forever. So see, that's the beautiful thing. We have the Lord of the Sabbath, and he's our Lord, and he's done everything necessary for us to be saved. And that's what worship is all about. It's we do please God. Don't you think, Matt, we please God when we come to church?
Sure. Yeah, because I mean, that's his desire for us.
Well, I'm going to put you on the spot here. You are a father, aren't you?
Yes.
I do believe you are.
Laugh
and there are at least two children we know of. but your son Noah, where's he at right now?
This moment?
Yeah. Well, just in general, yeah. Where's he at?
Yeah, no, he's going to college, and he's home for the summer, and yeah.
Home for the summer. And weren't you glad to see him come home for the summer?
Definitely.
Yeah. See, of course, our father loves to see us in church. Our fathers love it when their children and grandchildren come over to see him. But church is primarily about God giving us things from the forgiveness he pronounces at the very beginning, because we may be feeling guilty and down and having doubts and worries. And as a father, I'd love to feed my grandchildren too. Well, I wouldn't feed them, but Lynn makes some darn good cookies. But Jesus, God, feeds us with the body and blood of our Lord of the Sabbath for us, for the forgiveness of sins. So people, just remember that. Worship is about God doing something wonderful for you. It's all good. His law is good. But the Lord of the Sabbath, the Son of Man, Jesus Christ, he's the best that the Father can give us. So, well, Matt, thank you. I think it's been fun. We'll continue then with Mark and me next week on Wrestling with the Basics.
Showing support for KFUO is now easier than ever. You can sport a KFUO shirt, swag, or even socks by visiting our online store. Go to KFUO.org/store and order high-quality KFUO-branded merch. You no longer need to wait for our annual share-a-thon for a chance to show your KFUO spirit. Visually share and wear this ministry out in the world by checking out our selection. Every purchase helps to support our proclamation of Christ for you, anytime, anywhere. Go to KFUO.org/store.